This is the Snake River Gazette with your host, Keith Warnock, the KOZE podcast broadcast.
And welcome. This is the show that educates and entertains. No time for anything else. And it's brought to you each week by the Dream Team at Rick Woods Insurance on 21st Street. You want a real good reason to choose an insurance company? Rick Woods Insurance gives you several. How about a four-generation family tradition with a farmer's insurance company? Rick Woods Insurance on 21st Street, Lewiston. Online at rickwoodsinsurance.com and on Facebook.
The Snake River Gazette, with your host, Keith Warnock.
You gotta keep on trying, baby. And that trying's called life. You got to love life.
Lewiston was founded 157 years ago in 1862 in the wake of a gold rush which began the previous year near Pierce. President Lincoln signed the act creating the Idaho Territory in 1863 and established Lewiston as its capital for a couple of years. Men had money in their pockets, and in Lewiston, when you had money in your pockets, you could buy most anything you wanted. Most anything. For nearly a century, ours was a town of ill repute. By the time it was established, Lewiston's downtown was a red light district, and business was good. Men had come in droves to find gold, and the women followed before Idaho was even a territory. Problem was, women weren't allowed to hold a paying job, weren't even allowed to own any piece of land or other property, so some became otherwise employed in order to merely survive. The rest of the seldom discussed story after this from the Dream Team at Rick Woods Insurance.
The Snake River Gazette is back.
Hello.
With your host, Keith Warnock.
In the 1860s and 70s in Lewiston, it was all about supply and demand. Not legally allowed to work for money, nor own any property, some women did what they felt they had to do. And without question, the ladies of the evening and their madams could pocket more money than many men in Lewiston. In fact, Anna Ream and Carlotta Felice, with their U.S. Census occupations officially recorded as prostitutes, listed their incomes in 1 year as totaling nearly $15,000 between the two of them, which is worth nearly $300,000 today. Lewiston's John Vollmer, Idaho's first millionaire, reportedly had a net worth that year of $2,500, or about $50,000 today. During its heyday, Lewiston's red light district boasted about 40 so-called female boarding houses, from makeshift shacks to the upper floors of downtown buildings. Men ran the legit hotels in town, while women operated the brothels. Women like Lou Beavers, who'd stockpiled a fortune in San Francisco and moved her operation to Lewiston. Lou operated the very popular Beavers Hotel. The world's oldest profession thrived in Lewiston until its abrupt end in the mid-20th century. In 1949, Lewiston Police Chief Frank Jacobs admitted to the press that for the 3 years prior, the city council had quietly permitted prostitution with operations supervised by LPD. The ladies were each given medical exams and were fingerprinted. When the influx of streetwalkers arrived, the freelancers, the cops found the situation tougher to control. It is difficult to arrest these stray women. They follow no health rules and are generally filthy, Jacobs said. Local law enforcement would conduct raids of certain boarding houses that wouldn't or couldn't give kickback payments. The fines for no kickback compliance? Astronomical. That same year, 1949, the city council finally made prostitution illegal. And on the heels of Chief Jacobs' public admissions of city-run prostitution, the city council boarded up the boarding houses and sent Chief Jacobs packing. By the way, Louise Lou Beavers of the Beavers Hotel, you can still see the house she lived in on Normal Hill and pay the madam a visit anytime in Normal Hill Cemetery. We'll take a very entertaining and educational look at the 1970s today, and it starts with an event that shook these communities for years. Next. Coming up, do you remember the night of July 4th, 1977? You might, after this.
Here comes Big Bad Mama. 3,336 banks went bust in the Depression. Mama busted half of them. Angie Dickinson is Big Bad Mama, with her finger on the trigger and Texas by the tail.
The Snake River Gazette with Keith Warnock, the KOZE podcast broadcast.
I returned home to my residence on 20th Avenue in Clarkston late the night of the 4th of July, 1977, after having spent the day at Wallowa Lake with friends. I lived next door to the parents of Jeffrey Boston's ex-wife. She often stayed with her parents, who owned the home, having split with Boston, and on more than one occasion, the wee hours of the morning would be interrupted by flashing emergency lights and a bit of commotion next door. Our neighbors had stated that Boston had more than once shown up after midnight, banging on doors at their residence and their daughter's childhood home, attempting to enter the residence after the couple had split up. So the flashing lights weren't the first I'd ever seen as I arrived home that night. What neither I nor the rest of the community knew was the rather bone-chilling circumstances behind the police presence next door. Piggy Suzanne Miller knocked on the door of another Clarkston residence that evening of July 4th, that of Myrtle Boston, and asked to use the telephone. Piggy had been recruited to do so by Myrtle Boston's son Jeff and had been told that Myrtle would be home alone that night. Piggy Sue Miller was 24, used street drugs, and was working as a prostitute in Asotin County when she killed Myrtle Boston, whose name she didn't know until it came out in the newspaper 2 days later. She was supposed to get $5,000 for the killing, but claimed she received less than half that. Prevailing sentiment at the time was that the unmistakable roar of fireworks throughout the Twin Cities that night would drown out the noise of a gunshot. Myrtle Boston was shot twice. Admittedly, news of the murder of Myrtle Boston early the next day sent a small chill through me as I recounted the few times I'd seen the police next door to my home looking for Jeff Boston, and it occurred to me that they'd been next door last night, following up on the murder. Bruce Taylor of Lewiston, notorious at the time as a tough guy, planned the job and provided a diversion during the shooting. Rick Borland co-planned with Taylor and actively assisted the night of the killing. Peggy Miller pulled the trigger twice. Ralph Happy of Everett, Washington, helped with the planning, plus drove the getaway car. James Nickel, who claimed to have ties to the mob, acted as a gopher between Boston and the rest of the group, and would say only that Boston asked him about finding a hitman, but Nickel thought he was kidding. Taylor said he had had only one contact with Boston, who told him only, "You know what this is for," and handed him an envelope containing $2,500, a photograph, and a list. Sheila K. Bonaparte has insisted from the time she found the body the morning of July 5th, 1977, that her brother killed their mother. An alternate theory persisted that Jeffrey Boston had spread the word around the local drinking holes about getting an inheritance from his father's estate, who had died March 12, 1977, just 4 months prior to Myrtle's murder, and that perhaps Nickel and Taylor cooked up the whole scheme to extort money from Jeffrey Boston. Peggy Suzanne Miller, who pulled the trigger, now in her late 60s, originally sentenced to life, served about 15 years, then had her sentence reduced by Washington Governor Mike Lowry in 1994, making her eligible for parole that year, and she was eventually released. Bruce Taylor and Ralph Happy completed minimal prison terms. James Nickel and Rick Borland also completed terms on probation. Jeff Boston was released on bail in 1977 and disappeared the next February. He'd been rumored initially to be holed away somewhere in the Canadian wilderness, but was discovered after the television show America's Most Wanted broadcast the story. He was arrested in July of 1993 near Chemukla Springs, Florida, where he had been living the past 11 years using the name and identification of Samuel R. Marks, a friend from Enterprise, Oregon, who had been killed earlier in an automobile accident. Jeff Boston is serving a 30-year sentence, which was put under appeal over 20 years ago.
CBS News, a special report. Another attempt to assassinate President Gerald Ford. I'm Douglas Edwards.
Hey! My God! My God, there's been a shot! There's been a shot!
Stay back! Stay back!
On the sidewalk. We're being pushed back by the police. Somebody has fired a shot here. We don't know if anybody's been hit. My God! Somebody fired a shot.
One shot was fired. It did not hit the president. The president shook no hands, but was waving by his limousine when the shot was fired. The Secret Service told him to duck down, which the president did. And then he was quickly pushed into the car and whisked to the airport.
NBC Radio News, the fall of Saigon. This is Don Doak. Our reporter in Saigon, Jim Laurie, says the word the world has expected has come. The South Vietnamese government has given up.
In a mid-morning raid, radio broadcast, the acting president of South Vietnam, General Dung Van Minh, announced an unconditional surrender to Viet Cong forces around the city of Saigon.
WTFM, New York's great music station from the top of the World Trade Center.
It's 8 o'clock, and checking the news briefly, President Carter has ordered an inquiry into the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant accident, and the federal government has beefed up surprise inspections at other nuclear sites. Officials say the hydrogen bubble inside the reactor in Pennsylvania's Three Mile Island plant is shrinking, but officials say the high level of radiation inside the reactor has apparently begun to damage instruments inside the plant.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey, speaking especially to any American in uniform, anywhere. Stand by for news. Today's news and comment comes to you from Chicago. In Rio, a 5-page document has been left in the church poor box. Now, maybe that is a ransom demand from whoever kidnapped the Swiss ambassador.
Tonight we have... This is a great show tonight. Mr. Jack Benny. Along with the gentleman you all know, you've heard his voice so many times. Bugs Bunny, Porky the Pig. He does all the great cartoon voices. Mr. Mel Blanc is here tonight. Jim Henson and the Muppets.
Please. Please help.
What happened was true.
They're crazy. You gotta make us stop.
Some of the victims didn't have time to scream. Others weren't as lucky. Now, Bryanston Pictures presents every grisly detail of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the most bizarre and brutal series of crimes in America, and without a doubt, the most realistic shocker ever filmed.
Sally, I hear something. Stop! Stop!
Even if one of them survives, what will be left after the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
The Snake River Gazette with your host, Keith Warnock.
Ah, the 70s. We remember them as an era when women's rights and environmental movements competed with Watergate, the energy crisis, and the ongoing Vietnam War for the world's attention and ours. We looked back and celebrated 200 years of freedom and looked forward to a future of space exploration and new inventions that would make life easier and more fun. Little did we know, right? At the beginning of the decade, gasoline cost 35 cents per gallon. By the end, it was nearly 90 cents. Homes, on average, cost about 24 grand at the start of the 70s, and about $58,000 in 1979. We made about $10,000 a year in 1970, and 10 years later, boasted an average annual income of $17,500. We were spending about $4,000 for one of those new Datsuns from Japan, and a bit more if we chose for our American economy car counterpart. And of course, many of those cars sported an 8-track player. Just right for listening to my first 8-track acquisitions, the Who, Guess Who, and Rare Earth. I'll admit to one of my favorites being David Gates and the band Bread for a little soft rock transition, but by the time I'd discovered Led Zeppelin, T-Rex, Aerosmith, and ZZ Top, we'd graduated to cassettes. But oh, how my buds and I still cherished our vinyl LPs on our mammoth home sound systems. And right at the turn of the 70s, there was one disturbing trend we couldn't ignore. Initially, it was called the J-Jinx. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and Jim Morrison were, and continue to be, three of the most polarizing musicians in rock and roll history. Blinding lights that appeared and disappeared in the blink of an eye. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. Live fast and die young. Two phrases coined following the deaths of so many musicians that were sucked into the black hole of addiction. The rock legends indulged in the drugs that were part of the culture during the 60s and early 70s. But with money and fame comes an endless supply of whatever you want. Janis Joplin had just released I Got Them Old Cosmic Blues Again Mama in 1969, the time of her death. She had a long history of substance abuse, and in October of 1970, she lost her fight against addiction after being found dead from an accidental heroin overdose in Hollywood's Landmark Hotel. Interestingly, the circumstances regarding the death of Jimi Hendrix have not always been the certainty of drug overdose. He was found unconscious by his girlfriend in a London flat. At the scene, the police said the cause of death was a drug overdose. They say he took 9 sleeping pills and died of suffocation through vomit. But in a Rolling Stone article, according to Eric Burden from The Animals in War, Hendrix left behind for the girlfriend in whose apartment he died what Burden called a suicide note, which was a poem several pages in length.
For decades, the story regarding the death of Jim Morrison has been a little mysterious. Supposedly, Morrison was in a nightclub in Paris, felt sick, went back to his hotel, and was found dead in his bathtub from heart failure at the age of 27. Another account claims Morrison died in a toilet stall of his club after what he believes was a heroin overdose. He believes two drug dealers carried his dead body out of the club and back to his apartment. Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison. They all had J's in their names, and they all died around the same time. Those facts gave birth to what was called the J-Jinx. Additional credence was given to the J-Jinx phenomenon if you throw in original Rolling Stone Brian Jones, who died in a swimming pool. Jones, Hendrix, Joplin, and Morrison all died at the age of 27 between 1969 and 1971. But it was not until Kurt Cobain's 1994 death at age 27 that the idea of a 27 club began to catch on in public perception. In the Aberdeen, Washington newspaper, Kurt Cobain's mother was quoted as saying, "Now he's gone and joined that stupid club. I told him not to join that stupid club." The Snake River Gazette is brought to you by the Dream Team at Rick Woods Insurance on 21st Street. Find another place you can get nearly 140 years of combined service from one family with one company. The Woods family, four generations, and Farmers Insurance. I love them. Rick Woods Insurance on 21st Street, at rickwoodsinsurance.com, and on Facebook.
The Snake River Gazette with Keith Warnock. The KOZE podcast broadcast.
This week, the Snake River Gazette celebrates the decade of the 70s. Cool decade, of course, when we weren't rocking out in our rigs. Some of us were Breaker 19 chatting it up with our good buddies on a CB radio. Just one of the many fleeting trends of the 70s. The video game, that stuck around, that was making its appearance for the first time in the form of Atari and then in television. Microwave ovens started to appear for the mom, who was no longer staying home all day, cleaning house and tending the children, made life easier for everybody in the house. Calculators also came on the scene, along with the first home computers. Barcodes made it easier to check out at the grocery store, and a different kind of scanner, the MRI machine, guaranteed quicker and more accurate diagnosis of a variety of diseases and disorders. Back to the music. At the start of the decade, the top of the Billboard charts included Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water, The Carpenters' They Long to Be Close to You, American Woman by the Guess Who, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head by B.J. Thomas, and War by Edwin Starr. By 1976, it took over the U.S. and the world by storm. We're talking about disco, short for the French discotheque, and the top of the charts were occupied by Elton John and Kiki D's Don't Go Breaking My Heart, Johnny Taylor's Disco Lady, and Wild Cherry's Play That Funky Music. By the end of the decade, it was The Knack, Donna Summer, Gloria Gaynor, Chic, Peaches and Herb, and The Village People. In 1970, the top country hits included Lynn Anderson's Rose Garden and Conway Twitty's Hello, Darlin'. By 1979, it was Crystal Gayle and Half the Way and Hank Williams Jr. with Family Tradition. And thanks to the pros that bring you the Snake River Gazette each and every week, Rick Woods and his staff at Rick Woods Insurance, 21st Street, Lewiston. Four generations of one family working with one company. The Woods family and Farmers Insurance, there's none better. And they treat you like family, they really do. 21st Street, Lewiston, rickwoodsinsurance.com, and on Facebook.
Here's a story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I
than you.
The chores.
The stores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
Goodbye, city life.
Green Acres, we are there.
This is the Snake River Gazette with Keith Warnock.
That'll do it for this edition of the Snake River Gazette. And remember, when it comes to protecting yourself and your family, a four-generation family tradition. Rick Woods Insurance on 21st Street, Lewiston, at rickwoodsinsurance.com and on Facebook. Next week, I can't wait for this one. 50s and 60s, that's going to be fun. Plus, amazing and horrific events from the Valley's past. So see you next week.
None of us are really what we want to be, and very few of us are what we think we are, yet fewer of us are what we could really be.
Download the podcast at KOZE.com and hear new episodes Sunday mornings at 10 on AM 950 KOZE.